If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
And the thing about KPIs is they help you ask the right questions, right? Instead of asking what's the occupancy and how many leases did you get this week, I already have that information. So now I can ask why things are happening or why they're not happening, and it gets you to the solution quicker. That's the key to KPIs.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Kyle Mitchell is a managing partner of APT Capital Group. He's been investing in income-producing real estate since 2010 and currently manages and operates $41 million in multifamily assets in the Arizona markets. He's also the co-founder of the Asset Management Summit, which is focused on teaching people how to become the best-in-class operators. He has also launched Asset Management Mastery and is the author of the upcoming book, Best in Class. He hosts three meetup groups, educational webinars, and is the co-host of the Passive Income Through Multifamily Real Estate podcast. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on, Sam.
Oh, man, it's great. The pleasure is all mine. Obviously, with a resume like yours, there's a lot we can talk about. But maybe we'll just do it like we always do and ask you the same question we ask everybody who comes on is, where did you start? Where are you now? And how'd you get there?
Yeah, where I started was in 2010. I had a full-time job. I didn't think I was going to be leaving that job at all. I really loved what I did. I was a regional manager for a golf management company, and I played golf my whole life. So I thought, you know, golf was my whole life. But at that time, I needed to start doing something with my money. I wasn't a big stock market person. I never had been. I was in high school, and I invested $2,000 in a stock, and I lost it in like a month. And so I said, okay, I don't like the lack of control in that. And so I naturally, I think, gravitated towards real estate. 2010, I started investing in some single family turnkey homes in the Middle West and quickly learned that that's tough to scale. I got to about 10 homes and I sat back and I said, man, I want to get to 100 homes. How can I do that? It's going to take me 20, 30 years doing that. So in about 2013, I kind of pivoted. I actually wanted to leave the company that I was with. Golf was shrinking. And I wanted to be growing. And so it took me about 3 years to find something else that I wanted to fall into. But during that search, I found multifamily and I absolutely fell in love with it. And I just love the business model of it. It really resonated with me because of my background in the golf industry. A lot of people don't think that they could, you know, tie into one another, but managing businesses is essentially what I do. And I manage apartment buildings now. And so I fell in love with it quickly. 11 months after I left, or I found multifamily, I left my full-time job to pursue it full-time. And then, you know, where we're at now is we buy 100 plus unit multifamily apartments in the Arizona markets in both Phoenix and Tucson.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. So what were some things along that journey that you feel like you've done right?
I made the leap. You know, that was the hardest thing. And one of the things I did wrong is I didn't do it soon enough, but I made the leap. I just cut all ties and said, I'm going to do it. And I got that from a fear-setting exercise. I always mention this one from Tim Ferriss. It's his 4-hour work week. And he talks about how if you just go, if you're afraid of something, you go through this exercise. At the end of it, you're really going to find out that it's probably not as bad as you're thinking. And so for me, my fear-setting exercise is what's the worst that can happen if I leave my job? And essentially, I came out to the conclusion is that I would have to get another job. So there was really no downside, in my opinion. So as soon as I did that, my mindset changed and I jumped out and I took the leap.
That's fantastic. Talk to us about the first deal you did. How did you structure it? How did you get that deal across the finish line?
Yeah, so that one took 18 months to find. I left my full-time job before I actually had a deal in place. But 2 months in, being full-time, got our first deal. It was just a drive out to Tucson. My wife and I used to drive out there at 2 a.m, get there at 9. And on one of those drives, the broker called me and said, hey, Kyle, I just got this listing. Do you want to come see it? We were the first ones to see it. We were there with our property management company. So luckily, we got to tour comps. And so we were able to get that basically pre-market. So before kind of anyone else got to see it. And we structured that as a syndication. It was a smaller 42 unit deal, about $1.7 million. We could have done a JV with it, but I knew in the end, I wanted to be a multifamily syndicator. And so we structured it as a syndication so that I can learn the process on a smaller property. You know, everything from managing a property management company to managing the rehabs to, you know, investor relations, which is really important. So that's a 42-unit deal out in Tucson.
Why do you say that you would have preferred to syndicate it versus do a JV on a deal like that?
Because my goal was to be a syndicator. So could we have made more money on a JV? Yes. But my goal was not to make money on my first deal or a ton of money on my first deal. It was to learn the process of A to Z of how a syndication works, because doing a JV is completely different than a syndication. You know, you don't really have investors to report to. And that's one of the biggest things that I wanted to learn, to be honest with you, and how to raise capital, another thing, the PPM documents. There's so many different factors between a JV and a syndication. And if I want to be a syndicator taking down these, you know, multi-million dollar deals, I need to learn the process. And so that was the purpose of that first deal.
That's interesting. So what'd you have to raise on that?
$1 million.
Okay. $1 million of a 1.7 purchase price. Was there a lot of CapEx on it then?
Not a ton of CapEx, to be honest. So a lot of that money was just for the down payment. We're in Tucson on that first deal. It was our first deal, so our team wasn't as strong as it could have been. So loan to value was 65%, so 35% down. Then about $400,000 or $500,000 for CapEx and some fees and all that kind of stuff.
Gotcha. That's fascinating. Is that a deal you still own today, or have you exited that one?
Knocking on wood, it's supposed to close on Friday.
Congratulations. Well, we all know how closings go. I can't remember the last closing I went to that was like, oh, this went off without a hitch.
Right.
So, you know, like you said, knocking on wood. Talk to us about asset management. I think, you know, one of the things that's intriguing about your story is founding the Asset Management Summit. I mean, I don't know how to say this without being offensive, but asset management probably sounds like one of the most boring topics that we could talk about.
Yeah.
And yet it's something that, because we don't talk about it, it's often overlooked, which is why I think maybe you founded the summit and have really brought some value there. Can you kind of shed some light on that?
Yeah, it's absolutely one of the most boring parts of the job, but it is definitely one of the most necessary, if not the most necessary. And essentially what asset management is, you know, a lot of people think you buy a building, you pass it off to your property management company, and that's the end of the day, and they're going to manage your business plan and make money for you. And that probably could have happened the last 10 years because the market was so strong, but you're going to see a lot of hurt with people who don't know how to manage their assets, you know, when you're in conditions like we are today with COVID and things like that. But essentially asset management is executing your business plan, managing renovations, and holding your property management accountable to your business plan. You own the property, not the property management company. So no one has more skin in the game than you do. No one cares more than you do. And, you know, ultimately, you know, if you make $100,000 in revenue, the property management company is going to make $3,000, right? So there's not a lot there to, you know, push the property management company to manage the asset at a high level. So you as an asset manager are holding them accountable to those things, implementing systems, tracking KPIs and trends to get the best out of your property.
What are some KPIs or what are some things that you guys like to track that you hold your property managers accountable for?
Yep. Two things come to mind that are the most important is construction management, making sure they stay on time and within budget. Those things can get out of hand very quickly. And if you're overspending and you don't know about it, it's going to be too late by the time you do find out about it. And then how quickly they're turning them, right? If you can get a renovation done in 21 days versus 40, you're going to be renting them up sooner. So that has a huge impact on your bottom line. And then the other side that we really love to track is the leasing. Everything from how quickly do they return phone calls and leads to the communication that they provide. Is it professional? Is it welcoming? Is it warm? Do they call you first and then leave a message? Do they follow up after a couple of days? All that kind of stuff. And then also, what are their conversions? So how much are they converting these leads into actual leases and applications?
That requires some systems inside of the property management company to produce the data for you to analyze. Have you guys had a property management company maybe that wasn't sophisticated enough or didn't have those systems already built?
You know, so there is a reason why we only invest in Arizona right now. And it's because we really understand that the property management company you hire is essential to your business plan. Now, we still manage them, but we want to make sure that they have the systems in place, they have infrastructure, and they want to grow with us. And so we took a long time picking out our property management company to make sure that they were the right team to do that. And luckily, they operate in both Phoenix and Tucson. So we only have one property management company right now, and they are able to provide the things that we need to. Now, it didn't start out where it was like, here's everything that you need. You know, you have to work with them. You have to get some things customized. But when we went in with them, we said, hey, this is the type of team we are. These are the things that we need to see. Are you willing to help us out to get there? And they're very willing to customize a lot of our reports and help us be able to get the KPIs and trends that we need to see to manage the property.
So when you guys did your first deal, did you know what those KPIs were, or did you have a team member that was on board that, you know, happened to, you know, I mean, I'm just trying to think of the person that's scaling their commercial real estate holdings. Maybe they're going from residential to commercial. They may not even know necessarily what to ask. So did you guys know that, or did you just build this out over time?
Yeah, built out over time. I mean, my business partners also has a background in management and operations. I took a lot of what I learned from the golf business into what we do with apartments, which, you know, one of the things I mentioned earlier is like I didn't mention the secret shopper report, but holding them accountable for how quickly they get to leads. We used to be held accountable at the golf course. You know, do you answer the phone in 3 rings? Are you courteous and polite? Are you selling, upselling, all those different things? So we implemented that same sort of structure in the leasing office. And then other things is, you know, you're constantly learning as an investor, entrepreneur, business owner, whatever it is. And so, you know, we talk to people in the industry, and one of my mentors that I consider is Neil Bawa, and he is great at this kind of stuff. And a lot of his systems are ones that we've kind of taken and implemented ourselves and tweaked them to our business.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because again, I just, you know, you mentioned a lot of things there that I think a lot of people would go, huh, I'm not sure even really where to start. How often do you review those types of things? And then, you know, do you have once a month meetings with property management and say, okay, we've reviewed all the charts, we've reviewed all your, you know, call logs. And then how do you analyze that and then turn that into an effective, you know, key performance indicator that says you're either doing a satisfactory or not a satisfactory job?
Yeah, we talk to our property management company on a weekly basis. I review the, you know, main KPIs on a weekly basis, but every day I'm looking at things like how many leads came in, do we, you know, what is our occupancy, what are our collections, things like that. Especially during COVID, that was extremely important on how our collections were performing. So that would be something that I would check daily. So different KPIs I check daily, weekly, but no, it doesn't go any further than a week. And the thing about KPIs is they help you ask the right questions, right? Instead of asking what's the occupancy and how many leases did you get this week, I already have that information. So now I can ask why things are happening or why they're not happening, and it gets you to the solution quicker. That's the key to KPIs. And they also allow you to track trends. So, you know, depending on what the KPI is, we'll go back a month, 2 months, 3 months, or even a year and track the trends and make sure that the performance is there. But there's also trailing indicators and leading indicators. So one that allow you to look 3 or 4 months back or a year back. And then there's also ones that allow you to look forward. And those are just as important so that you can be proactive instead of reactive. I think that's very key in any business. You want to be thinking 3-4 months in advance, not as things come up. Because if something's coming up and you're not planned for it, it's already too late.
Well, sure. What's a leading indicator? What are some things you look at on that front that you say, hey, this kind of gives an indication of what's yet to come?
Yeah, renewals, you know, leases coming up. How many leases do you have coming due in the next 90 days? That's going to have a lot to do with how aggressive you can be on your renewals and your rents. You know, if you don't have many units coming up on renewal over the next 3 months and your occupancy is high, you can be very aggressive with those renewals. That's something that we change on a weekly basis, is where our rents are and how aggressive we are with renewals. Now, if you have 10 renewals coming up in the next 3 months on a 100-unit building, that's, you know, 30% of your property is going to come due over the next 90 days. You're going to have to test a little bit more than if you only had 5 due. So maybe you're going to peel back on that, test maybe a portion of them, maybe 5. If you get those, okay, you can be aggressive. But if you don't get them, maybe you've got to cut down on your renewals. So we use those leading indicators to kind of determine where we're going to be with our rents.
When you say you don't get them, you mean the people don't actually renew?
Yep, exactly.
Right. And one of the things that you would see would be a cause of that would be maybe too aggressive of a rent bump or some other indicator.
Yeah, and it's important to always ask, you know, why, or have a form for them to fill out. Why do you're not renewing? Maybe crime or parking or moving out of state. There's all these different things which we track as well. But if they're marking that the price is too high, then you're going to have to go back and maybe rework what your renewals are.
Right, right. And so you guys are adjusting your renewal prices on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's pretty, I mean, that's very, not hands-on, but that's very current. Like, I think that's probably what a lot of people don't do that.
I think it's very easy to just say, hey, let's do a standard $25 to $50 rent bump on renewals. But, you know, what if this month we have 0 1 bedrooms coming due and only 1 2 bedroom coming due? We can go to full market with that renewal. And if it's $250 difference, yeah, if it opens up, it's not a big deal, right? Because we only have one available, and then we can get that market rent for it versus having 10 available. I mean, the difference between $25 and $50 is huge in our industry. I mean, that is all the profit. And so if you can change a renewal for a few weeks to be $50 over $25, I mean, that just grows your NOI that much quicker.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What are your long-term goals and plans?
Yeah, right now we want to be one of the bigger buyers in the Arizona market. We've got a long way to go with that. You know, we have 4 properties right now. Would love to continue to grow in both Phoenix and Tucson, continue to educate people on asset management, and then possibly add another market here in the next 18 months, but really just focused on growing our team in the Arizona market, adding on an asset manager assistant that can help on some stuff. And then we just brought on an executive assistant as well. So just continuing to grow our team.
Right. And would you say that's one of the things that is, you know, has potentially slowed your growth? Or is it one of those things where you guys have grown really at the speed that you've wanted to grow?
Because of limiting ourselves to a market?
No. Just not expanding the team. Have you expanded the team at the speed you want? Or is this now you're catching up on the team expansion?
Yeah, I mean, we're ahead of it now, but I would have liked to hire an assistant earlier, and I would suggest that to people too. I think a lot of people get in their mind, oh, we're going to have to spend $50,000 a year. But if you break it down, another guy that I look up to is Tim Brotz, and he always says, don't look at it like $50,000 in a year, because in 3 months, you're going to achieve so much more by hiring this person. Look at it at, what, $3,000, $4,000 for the next couple of months. Can you do that? I mean, that changed my mindset as well. I would certainly have hired people quicker. We would have loved to grow quicker, but I think right now our trajectory has been pretty good. You know, you always want to do more and be better and all that. But looking back at what we've accomplished in the last 2 years, we've done pretty well, and we have some big goals over the next 5.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Is there anything at all? And that's a very positive thing. I think a lot of people look back and like, crud, man, if I'd have just done X, Y, and Z, it could have been a lot better. So good for you for checking the boxes off along the way. But is there anything at all that you would have done differently if you could?
Yeah, hired a team faster. You know what I mean? I would have just bit the bullet and hired 2 people immediately and helped us grow and helped us acquire more properties. But, you know, you live and you learn.
Right, right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. Hey, let's, is there anything else here, you know, before we jump into the final 4, anything else that we should talk about, you know, as it pertains to asset management, questions I haven't asked?
You know, we do a free summit, which is in June, and it's completely free because we're just really passionate about getting the word out there that it's not just about raising capital and doing your first deal. It's about learning how to run the business as well, because it's just not as easy as people think it is by handing it off to a property management company. So that's called the Asset Management Summit. It is virtual, completely free. It's 7 days. And we've got the, you know, industry leaders on this kind of stuff talking about their systems and processes where you can learn to implement them very easily. So that's amsummit2021.com. And that's June 21st through the 27th.
Wow, that's really crazy. You guys are doing a 7-day summit for free.
We did a 14-day summit last year for free, but we had to cut it down. 14 days was just too much for me and my business partner. But yeah, I mean, we have probably 20, 25 speakers still going on every day. We'll do some speaking as well. So it's a really great, great summit.
Man, that's fantastic. And you said that was amsummit.com?
amsummit2021.com.
amsummit2021.com. That's fantastic. Wow. That's super cool. You might have just taken away one of my final 4 questions, but you know, that's all right. We'll jump right into those. Kyle, if you were to give one piece of advice to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
Be consistent.
That's short and sweet. I like that. What is one thing you were doing to stay on top of your game?
You know, I'm always trying to grow and be better. And so even with consistency, I need to be better on it. And so what I do is I write down or I read my year goals for the rest of this year and my five-year goals every day. And so what that does is it keeps me really focused on what my end goal is. I think you can get caught up in a lot of things and not think you're doing well. But when you have that in front of you every day, it keeps you motivated, and it also kind of reiterates how far you've come.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny. I think we might share a similar strategy in that. And I was reviewing just the year goals this morning. As I looked through, I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of forgot about whatever it was that was supposed to come due in April. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I need to refocus on whatever that is. So that's a powerful exercise. When it comes to giving back, what is one way you are making the world a better place?
The world a better place. I'm helping other people get into multifamily investing. I don't know if that's the world, but I'm definitely big on educating other people. It's a passion that I found that when I first got started in this industry, it was not something that I had in mind, to be honest. I'm an introvert at heart. And so talking to other people is difficult to me sometimes, but I found a lot of passion helping others achieve their goals alongside mine.
That's awesome. Kyle, for listeners who want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, I did mention it earlier, amsummit2021.com. We also have a book coming out on the topic of asset management, which there's not one out there, and it's going to be called Best in Class. That does come out June 29th, so definitely check that out on Amazon.
That's awesome. Kyle, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.